Anna has a podcast called Neoliberal Hell. And the very fact that she would call it that means she's on to something.
Thank you so much.
What is it you're saying that you think is connecting as best you can in the limited time we have?
Some of the things that I think everybody's thinking today, something's wrong. And it's much simpler than we make it out to be what's wrong. Nations not treating each other well shouldn't surprise us. We don't treat each other well. The emotional violence that goes on in this society, the personal violence, is so thick that its eruption physically in riots and wars is just a reflection of the eruptions that go on daily. For thousands and thousands of years, really, the earth has been dominated by a thought system of fear which accumulates generation after generation after generation to the point where the most insane conclusions are justified as just the way things are.
You know, there was a real shift in thinking, a great maturation of thinking in the culture in the last few decades when it comes to health and healing. You don't just wait till you get sick and then try to fight the sickness. We do all kinds of things to try to proactively cultivate and maintain our health. But when it comes to world conflict, we just wait till everything's catastrophic and then we look to the military, basically, to zap the problem. Well, that's immature thinking. We need to proactively cultivate the conditions of peace, the way we proactively cultivate the conditions of health. We're not brought up to realize how powerful thought is. Every thought you think, you know, are you going to bless that person or are you going to blame that person? Are you going to judge that person? Are you going to forgive that person? The point being not the effect it's going to have on them, but the effect it's going to have on you. You know, we all know that what we do is important, but there's a growing realization, not just that what you do is important, but what you think is important. And people subconsciously know everything.
Welcome, listeners. I am so excited to bring to you probably our favorite guest yet.
One
we've been so excited for. It's been months in the coming, but we're here with former presidential candidate and potentially future presidential candidate Marianne Williamson, also New York Times bestselling author, took hold of the stage in her run in 2020, and we're really excited to see if that is going to happen again. There's no one I'd like to see disrupt the system more than you, Marianne. So welcome to the pod.
Welcome,
Marianne.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And
thank
also
you.
A goddess. We have to add that Marianne the goddess is here.
Really? Us. Hot crone, wise elder, whatever you want.
Amazing. Of course, we met you last year when you were speaking at Columbia. You're friends with our friend Henry Williams. Mm-hmm. From the Gravel Institute. We thought it was really funny, and we can play the clip here. You were saying that you were Marxist before basically everyone that you've been on the podcast with. We mentioned Chapo Trap House, and you're like, yeah, I was a Marxist when they were still in diapers, or before they were even in diapers.
Well, I don't think that I said I was a Marxist. I said I was reading Marx.
Oh, okay.
You know, I never identified as a Marxist, but I certainly read all that when I was in college. And actually, my father we had to memorize the Communist Manifesto when I was a little kid. That was my father's idea of good things to do with the kids.
Yeah,
was that formative for you think? He also took you to Vietnam, right?
He did. My father was that kind of old left, and he did take us to Saigon. I had come home from school in the seventh grade, and I was telling my parents at dinner what my social studies teacher had taught us, which is that we had to be fighting in Vietnam or we would one day be fighting on the shores of Hawaii. It was called the domino theory. And I saw my mother go like this, like, oh. And my father's face was getting very white. And then he stood up. He couldn't take it anymore. He said, that's it, sweetheart. He said to my mother, get the tickets. We're going to Vietnam. And then he went on and on about how the military industrial complex was not going to eat his children's brains. And it was 1965. The war was like 5 miles outside Saigon. Saigon had not fallen, but you were close enough to the action to get a very visceral sense of what a war-torn country means. And I was 13 years old.
Mm-hmm. Was that shocking to see? I mean, along with the culture shock of being, you know, in Asia.
You know, that was my dad. Was it shocking? I don't think as a 13-year-old I was shocked. I was being seriously taught what was going on in the world. Yeah, I remember the telephone in the hotel, police, fire, bomb squad. There was a very tense atmosphere, certainly. And my father would show us bullet holes on walls and talk to us about where they came from.
Do you think from an early age, your father, you know, taught you to question
absolutely
the American, educational system in those kind of ways, having you come home and say something like that?
Yes. Yes. But it's very important that we see the context, which was quite different. My father fought in World War II. He was an immigration lawyer, a very left-wing immigration lawyer. And we flew the American flag in our front yard. At that time, that would not have been considered odd. We thought of him as a great patriot. The fact that he was, you know, he would write letters to the immigration service that began, "Listen here, you bastards." And at that time, you know, they would write back and say, "Sam, look, we'd simply, you know, you got to understand this better." It was a different time. And yes, I traveled all over the world with my parents when I was a child. We traveled behind the Iron Curtain, it was called at the time. People used to say to my parents, "Why are you taking your kids to travel internationally so young? They won't even remember." And my father used to say all the time, he would say, "It'll get under their skin." And it absolutely got under my skin. All kinds of propaganda about America that I haven't been vulnerable to. Like others have. I certainly believe in the exceptionalism of our principles, but that's not something you can just bequeath generation to generation. Just the fact that one generation was exceptional doesn't mean you are, just because they were. And also, I haven't been vulnerable to certain propaganda about other people and other peoples and other governments in a way I would have been. So absolutely, everything we go through in childhood, of course, is foundational.
Did you ever think that you'd have a life in politics when you were young?
No, I didn't even think I'd have a life in politics when I was older. When I first started lecturing on spirituality and metaphysics, my father came to me one day and he said, "What happened to you? I raised you to wage the revolution. What happened to you?" And I said, "I think love is the revolution, Daddy. Love is core. We have to change our minds and hearts." And my father was very understanding of that. And I still believe it, by the way. But what I began to see about 20 years ago, I've had a career for 40 years in which being up close and personal with people in some of the worst moments of their lives has been core to what I do. And it's been a privilege to have that kind of a relationship with people in some of their most fragile and vulnerable and agonizing hours. But I saw something begin to change over the last 20 years. I began to see people who were in trouble for no other reason than bad public policy. I began to see people who were working very, very hard, getting up every day, trying to do right by their kids, who were stymied by the system.
Right.
So it's one thing if you're helping somebody who got a diagnosis of cancer, or you're helping someone who has gone bankrupt, or you are helping someone whose husband left them, or you're helping someone who is an addict, or you're helping someone whose child is addicted. But I began to see patterns about 20 years ago that no, what's wrong in these people's lives is that the massive transfer of wealth and opportunity that has occurred in this country has really been a kind of war on the poor and a war on the middle classes, to the point where we hardly have a middle class in this country. I'm old enough that I've watched this happen. And so I did not start, I mean, I've always been involved in politics as a you know, as a vital citizen and participant, you know, the way I was raised. But I began to see something change around 20 years ago that was really, I understand now, it was what started.